This is the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast, hosted by Bernie Corbett.
Well, welcome everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Inside ECAC Hockey. Bernie Corbett, pleased to be joined on the women's side. Our profile this week is the captain of the Yale Bulldogs, senior captain out of Detroit, Michigan, L. Hachi. L, welcome to the show. Great to have you join us this week.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Well, L, we're excited to have you on the program. I mean, the accolades that you've piled up here, the resume that you've put together during your college career is outstanding. It's estimable. It's exemplary. And now things winding down here in your senior season. I'm sure a lot of excitement as you head toward the ECAC playoffs. Just really kind of to start back at the beginning, I know a little bit about the family history because of my long relationship. Some may say too long, but I stopped listening to him with Boston University Hockey. To remember your dad, Todd, who was a proud member of the 1989 Harvard National Championship team. So I guess my first question, you come out of Detroit, you played for one of the organizations there in the Midwest with Bell Tire, which is a top organization in the junior hockey ranks. How did you end up at Yale and not Harvard? And what happened over the dinner table when you said, I mean, was there a moment, Dad, I'm going to Yale? I mean, did Harvard ignore you? I got to find out about this. This is the investigative reporter in me for a member of the Harvard National Championship team daughter who's an outstanding player to actually go to the dark side and go to New Haven.
Yeah, you know, it's a little deeper than that because my parents actually met at Harvard. And my older brother was at Harvard. So it runs deep in the family. And my aunt went there. So we were definitely Harvard through and through. And growing up, I kind of always thought I would go there. But then when I started going on my recruiting trips, my parents were really encouraging of branching out and just seeing what was the best fit for me. It was actually them who sort of opened my eyes and encouraged me to go and look everywhere because, like I said, when I'm going on trips freshman, summer year, I had already assumed I was going to go to Harvard. So it actually started by them kind of promoting just whatever I would want to do and making sure that I was going on all of these visits. And I mean, I'm so thankful that they did. I ended up going on a lot, but they say that when you know, you know. And when I came to Yale, I just fell in love with the campus. I always knew I wanted to go somewhere like Harvard that had the academics and the athletics like equally as touted and equally as important and prioritized at the institution. So, I mean, obviously Yale is top tier with both of those things. And I also wanted to go somewhere where I thought that I could make a difference on the team. And I just got a really good vibe from the teammates that were there that I visited. And I don't know, it was just, they never pressured me once to pick Harvard or swayed me one way or another. And I went downstairs one day. It's actually kind of bizarre because I talked to my parents about everything. But I just went downstairs one day and committed to Yale and then came back up and told them like I.
And they were OK with it. They didn't all of a sudden send you out to the garage or anything and say, you know, this is say hello to your new living quarters or anything. No.
Yeah. I mean, you might not even recognize my dad anymore. He is all decked out in Yale blue.
Wow.
Yes. He's at every game. He's got his scarf, his different lucky sweaters. Yeah. He's a convert.
He must be. I guess I can think of a few people that aren't taking his phone calls anymore. Chuck Hughes, Lane McDonald, Teddy Donato, and a few others that I could name. They probably stopped. They probably ghost. They're ghosting him now. They've canceled him, you know.
I saw a few of his old teammates when we were at Harvard a couple weekends ago. They came out to say hi to my mom. So,
okay.
No bad blood.
No. Well, that's good. I mean, these things can happen. I'll tell you a story here. I'm sure you follow hockey well enough. You know, Mike Sullivan, the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, two-time Stanley Cup coach. And he was a proud captain of Boston University, team NCAA Final Four team 1990, actually contemporary, played against your dad in the college ranks. And his father and his brother and his sister, I mean, a complete Boston College family. And similar, he didn't even want to visit BU. And his father said, you're going to visit BU, you're going to meet Coach Parker. And he came out of there and said, Dad, I want to go to BU. Stunned the entire family. And it worked out pretty good for him. He's won a couple of Stanley Cups, and he played about 900 games in the NHL. So he's kind of lived happily ever after. So there you go.
Yeah. I think the moral of the story is to listen to your parents. So
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we certainly don't want to take your mother out of the equation, because your mother didn't just go to Harvard. She was an outstanding tennis player at Harvard, tennis captain at Harvard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty good athletic bloodlines there that you've had the benefit of, as a matter of fact, between your mom and your dad, no doubt. And so the decision to go to Yale, and then your career once again at Yale has been, there's been a number of records. You had a 35 assist season as a sophomore, where you established a school record. 51 points was the most in decades at the school. You've been all ECAC, all Ivy, all New England, second team All-American. Also, we talk about the season and the reason, is that we like to say, academically, you've been outstanding as a scholar athlete. Can you give us some insight about your studies and your pursuits there at Yale, and why that's been a good academic experience for you?
Yeah. So as I was just touching on, my family went to Harvard. We've always been very oriented around academics. And at some point, obviously hockey is going to come to an end. And so that was sort of drilled into me, is to prioritize academics as well, because for like the longevity of my life, it's obviously going to be important. And so that started from a young age. And I have two older siblings who sort of had the same values instilled in them, and I was able to look up to them and all of the hard work that they did. And so this started, I mean, elementary, middle school. I was always sort of an overachiever, loved getting good grades and showing my parents the A's. And so when we went to high school, we went to a college prep school called Country Day. And I would say it's just a mini Yale. Their motto was a sound mind and a sound body. So you have to play two sports if you go there, no matter what. And it's a really rigorous and challenging academic institution. And so that sort of just translated to Yale. And I luckily wasn't sort of shell-shocked or underwater or just out of my own league here. I was sort of just able to hit the ground running, and it's just continued. And I'm a political science major, which I decided my sophomore year. And I came in not knowing what I wanted to do. And then based on just, you kind of have to take a variety of classes because it's a liberal arts institution. And I had taken a few poli sci classes and loved them. And that definitely makes it a lot easier too. Because I'm interested in it. I'm wanting to learn and wanting to do the work and take these interesting classes.
No, absolutely. And I'll have to warn you that I was a poli sci major, so it's no guarantee of future success. So just pump the brakes a little bit. So seriously. And of course, the interest level and the stimulation, the interest level of whatever your pursuit is, obviously is vital. And you talked about sound mind, sound body. I mean, my goodness, I'm looking to do the research to talk to you today. You're four-time what? All-state. In both soccer and tennis, in addition to hockey, tennis champion, individual and team champion, state champion. The other sports that you played, hockey always number one on the list. I mean, you know, pretty good soccer player, and tennis is different because it's an individual sport, and you know, you're in the arena alone, etc. It's a whole different mindset in its own way. I'm a tennis fan myself, but how do the other sports rank with the accomplishments and achievements that you've had across the board?
Yeah, well, you really did your research.
I always do.
Yeah, well, I think that they sort of just phase out naturally. Tennis, I'd played all tennis, soccer, hockey my whole life since I could walk. And tennis takes up a lot of time. And if you want to play tennis competitively, there comes a time where you really can't do anything else. And I was sort of beginning to realize that. And I just loved hockey and soccer so much. And I didn't necessarily have the same love for tennis. I loved winning, but I didn't love the process of winning. I don't know if you've ever played tennis, but it is brutal out there on the court. You're alone and it's a grind, man. Like my matches would be over 3 hours sometimes. And so I would say that at the time of my freshman year of high school, I was probably the best at tennis. And my mom loves to tell the story. I went to nationals. I went to doubles nationals. We actually won. And that was my last tennis tournament ever. And it wasn't a sad thing. I sort of just knew it was going to be. I got home. I'm like, yeah, mom, don't sign me up for any more tournaments. And that was it. I kind of just like was done with tennis competitively, except for high school tennis. So I still had it in my life, but it wasn't traveling every weekend and training 5 hours a day. And my mom's favorite story is that we would run into people who I would grow up with and play against in tournaments. And they didn't believe her when they said that I was done. They thought that I was off training somewhere and was going to come back, but I really was done, but they just couldn't believe it. And then soccer has always held a special place. I played that to the same level as hockey all the way through high school. And then even was wanting to play soccer here at Yale. And I'll make sort of a long story short. I had talked to the coach, then that coach left. Then I talked to the next coach, and then that coach left. Then I even talked to the next coach, but I broke my leg at the end of freshman year. So was going to start in the spring, didn't. Then it was COVID, and my love for hockey grew exponentially when I got to college. So at that point, it was pretty clear to me that I was just going to really lean into hockey and not miss any of it.
And then and focus on hockey. That's interesting. Nobody could believe you were done with tennis. They thought you were, you know, hiding out in Florida with Nick Politeri Academy. That's right. Yeah, she's coming back. Be aware. She'll be back. She's training. But, with the road to hockey, I think there was really kind of cosmic, karmic to point you in the direction of where you've obviously thrived with the experience with hockey. You mentioned about COVID, and you actually played in Slovakia. You went to Slovakia. You played hockey in Slovakia during the COVID time.
I did.
What was that experience like? That must have been, culturally. I mean, that's at a young age. That must have been pretty cool.
Yeah. So I was 19 when I was over there. My grandparents, so my mom's parents are Slovakian. Their story is incredible. They survived the Holocaust as Jews in Slovakia and were able to sneak to the US with $75 to their name during communism. My grandpa was a doctor. And so I grew up hearing these stories and just being in awe of them. And this sounds weird, but I am so grateful for COVID because I got the chance to do something that I would never have had a chance to do on a normal trajectory of life. And sort of happened because I was looking for somewhere to play hockey and train for the year. I wanted to get better. I wanted to be on the ice. Just because I wasn't at school didn't mean that I couldn't practice. And we had thrown around maybe going back and playing for Beltire because I was still within the age limits, but I didn't really want to go backwards in that sense. And so my parents helped me reach out to the Slovak Hockey Federation and they got me all set over in Slovakia. And I lived with the team for the year, got my citizenship, and it was a great experience. I would do it 10 times over again.
Well, that's talk about taking a negative and making it into a real exponentially a positive. That's a great story that you had. Once again, you never would have that opportunity, but opportunity knocked because of strange circumstances and made the most of it. And that was back was 19, 20 was beginning of COVID. You had an outstanding freshman year. You're the UCAC rookie of the year. And then the next year was the COVID year and then coming back. And come back you have, and the Yale program currently, just to bring us right to the present, coming off a split weekend, win against Colgate, lost to Cornell, tight games once again. You had a three-point weekend in one of the offensive leaders last weekend. As you navigate this always treacherous path in the ECAC, I've been asking people on the women's side this all year. The league is just unbelievably competitive. I mean, what you see weekend in and weekend out, you've been around this league for 4 years. It seems like it's taken on a whole new level this year, Al, than where it has been. I mean, it's even raised the bar even higher.
Yeah, the league is stacked. That's what I love about it, is every weekend you're going to get a competitive game, and there's no weekends off. And it's what I love about it, and sometimes it's what I hate about it. I mean, it's a grind day in and day out, and you have to equally pre-scout every team. Like, anything could happen, and you see that in the scores every night. Like, we'll get off the ice, we'll check the ECAC, and we'll see what happened around the league, and there's never fails to be a surprise. But I don't even want to say surprise, because it happens every weekend. So I would say I completely agree with you. From my freshman year to now, I have noticed the league get even deeper and even better. And so that's great for women's hockey. And I think it's translating even into the pro league. I think women's hockey is just getting better and better. And I'm excited to see what happens.
No question. And as with the playoffs looming here, chance to give us a perspective on your line mates, Anna Bogman playing on the left side. She's a Massachusetts native. And then, of course, as I always say, from that hockey hotbed of Florida, on the right side, you've got Jordan Ray. How do you three work together, function together, and perform at a high level to be able to put up the numbers, especially now as you get ready for the most important time of the year?
Yeah. Well, I love Bargs and Jay Ray both on and off the ice. They are such hard workers in the classroom, on the ice. We actually were a line from day one to day end last year, so my junior year. And then we lost a few seniors this year and sort of switched the lineup around, trying to see if we could mix us up and put us on different lines and maybe get production further down across the board. But ultimately, we decided that we had a pretty bang on year last year, and we were just going to put us three together and see what we could do. And so far, it's been a great decision. We're back like we never left. I love playing with them. Jordan and Bargs' speed up the walls is as good as anyone's in Division I hockey. They can fly. And we just have a really great relationship, and that translates into our on-ice. We have so much fun in practice. You can see it in the way that we're laughing and just loving to be there. And I think that all three of us are just so excited to be back together playing again.
And you've got 12 points in your last 9 games, so thriving with that unit. Also hitting a career milestone, 164 career points, tying for the most all time. That's a record that's stood for 3 decades. I guess those are the things you'll think about long after some of the milestones and individual records. But for right now, your perception of the team as you get ready for the postseason and what's ahead. How do you feel about this team in terms of being the captain, the pulse of the team, the identity of the team as you get ready for this important stretch and want to be playing? Obviously, you want to be hitting your stride and playing your best at this point.
Yes. We've been sort of up and down this year with our consistency, and we've had a lot of meetings and we know what we're capable of. And so I'm so excited that rolling into playoffs, like you said, we're hitting our stride. Obviously, the Cornell game didn't go the way we wanted, but from Pia all the way up, it was a great team game. And I think we left last weekend with a huge confidence boost, beating Colgate, obviously, and then playing Cornell really tight. While we were disappointed, we were able to watch the film back and be proud of the way we played. And I think that everyone is reaching their peak confidence right now, which is obviously ideal heading into playoffs. And so we're all really excited to get going. This is what you play for all year. And so there's definitely a different buzz and energy at the rink.
Very important this time of year. Last point that I wanted to make, you're also involved with, I noted, with some charitable work. Could you give us a little bit of background. Skate to Be Great has been associated with you and what's that's all about.
Yeah. So Skate to Be Great was founded by my older brother, actually. That's back in Michigan. And my mom was the president of the association that we grew up playing in, at the rink, like 10 minutes from our house. So that's where it was based out of. And it's basically just, it was an opportunity. It was in order to give everybody an opportunity to get free coaching, free equipment, free ice time. And it's sort of just that hockey is for everyone attitude. And we wanted everyone to have the chance to experience the game that was so important to us and our family and that we were able to dive into when we were 2 years old. And so that was his mission. Yep. And my sister proceeded to take it over after him. And then I took it over from her. And then my younger brother took it over from me. So it's really great. We loved doing it. We were the coaches. We got our friends to help coach. And the equipment drives are obviously important. Instead of just letting your old gear collect dust in the garage, other people can use it. And that was just a really special organization to our whole family.
Absolutely. And just the whole question of the opportunity. This is Hockey Week across America. You may be familiar. They have their Try Hockey for Free Day, all about giving opportunity and what you did with and what you're doing, your family, with Skate to Be Great. It fits right in with that goal. It's really admirable to see. And I know you have an interest in photography. My suggestion would be just have as many incriminating photos of your dad decked out in all of that Yale apparel, and then you could probably blackmail him for anything you need, you know, new car, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, you just get that stuff out there, send it to Billy Cleary, and that'd probably, all bets would off if his old coach saw it. It'd probably track him, hunt him down immediately, knowing Billy's still pretty feisty at about 90. But really, I think Skate to Be Great, good place to kind of wrap up here, because that's what you'll be aspiring to with the playoffs, Al, is to be Skate to Be Great with the Bulldogs. We wish you the best of luck here moving forward into the postseason with your club.
All righty. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Our profile this week, Al Hartje joining us here on the women's side for Inside ECAC Hockey. Well, welcome back, everyone, to this week's edition of Inside ECAC Hockey. Bernie Corbett, pleased to be joined on the men's side this week by the netminder for the Colgate Raiders out of Sherwood, out of Beaumont, Alberta. Played in Sherwood Park at Alberta Junior Hockey League, Carter Guylander. Carter, welcome. And, well, I guess it's getting to be, I'm going to call it Carter Guylander time, playoff time. We're almost there with the great impact that you had on the playoffs, just going back a year ago, but body of work here for you through 27 games with 2.93 goals against, 904 save percentage, now playing for Coach Mike Hunter and looking to take Colgate to the postseason. First up, I guess, is the transition in the program. Good friend of mine for longstanding, great hockey guy, icon, really just the face of Colgate hockey, Don Vaughn, retired. He stepped aside due largely in part to your efforts last year, being a big part of the equation with it as a champion. Transition this year to Mike Hunter, a guy that I believe was instrumental in bringing you to Colgate. So he was certainly a familiar face coming over to coming in to take over the program.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, Don, he was a huge part of the Colgate culture. He's been the coach for 30 plus years. So it's he's had a huge impact and kind of carried his legacy at Colgate. We named the head coach at Colgate position after Don Vaughn, the head coach. So a nice little tribute there. And like you said, Mike Carter, he was one of the guys recruiting me to come to Colgate. And so that was a pretty special full circle moment for him to come back. And when we found out that he was announced to be our new coach, we were all pretty excited. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but he toured North America to visit all of the returners and the incoming freshmen. So that was pretty sweet for him to do and take some time out of his very busy summer. Cause I know he was trying to figure everything out. Cause kind of thrown at him pretty short notice.
Yeah. No Zoom calls for Coach Hunter. He wanted to get right right in the door, similar to, you know, almost like re-recruiting, if you will. You know, it's so important to get, they always say, get in the living room and, you know, get to know what the mom likes to cook and, you know, all that other stuff that goes into the personal side of developing a strong culture. And Mike certainly demonstrated that. He did it by example.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, as somebody that has already met him and I knew what kind of person he was, I was excited for him to come by. And then for the guys that haven't met him yet, I was pretty excited every time that he's came by my place. It's for some reason, him and my parents get along really well and they can't stop laughing. So he's a great guy. And we're pretty excited that our program's in good hands.
Indeed, he was kind of took his stand-up act around North America there, you know, with Mike getting in and being his affable self. And truth be told, about your recruiting process to Colgate, I guess Mike made such a strong impression on you and your family. This is the place. You never did, I believe, you never did a formal visit to Colgate. It's like Mike kind of sold you, if you will.
Yeah, that's right. I had my values and I wanted to go to school that I could also prioritize my education. So when Mike came by and told me all the bells and whistles that Colgate had to offer, it was basically a no-brainer. And I think a week after that, I committed.
Mm-hmm. And as far as your academic pursuits at Colgate, economics is, I believe, your major, and I know you're very serious about that part of it, and have been acknowledged as you know, an all around guy and a guy that's been real serious on the academic side. How's that going, and how do you see that? I know you obviously see a future in hockey, but the academic stimulation that you've received there, God, if you give us some insight about that.
Yeah, it's over my past 4 years, it's definitely been a learning curve. You have to be able to time manage, especially while playing hockey. So it's some valuable life lessons there and some organizational skills. But I always say, you know, you can't play hockey forever. And if you have a great pro career and you play until you're 35 and retire, you still have many working years ahead of you. So having a Colgate degree is pretty top notch. And that's just one of the beauty things about coming to college hockey and then also to a school like Colgate or that's an Ivy League caliber education that sets you up really well after your playing career.
No doubt about that. And a strong network. I know just longstanding from guys that I know that went to Colgate. There's a great network. There's a great bond among the Colgate community. And, you know, very similar to the Ivy League. It really is akin to that.
Yeah, absolutely. This summer we normally have our golf outing with our alumni golf outing in August before we're all back on campus. But mm-hmm. after some convincing with Mike, we changed it to September while all of us were on campus and we were actually able to participate in the golf tournament with the alumni. So it was a really cool experience to, you know, network with the alumni, meet them, the guys that have been here before us, and build some relationships that way.
Speaking of golf courses, you were on a golf course when you found out you got drafted. As a matter of fact, you know, give us your take on that. And it wasn't like you were sitting by the phone. Hey, I'm out working. You were working, I think, your summer job, and then all of a sudden, hey, Detroit Red Wings are calling. That was a pretty cool way to kind of break up your lunch, maybe a lunch break or something, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I watched the draft the second day of the draft in the morning. I couldn't get my shift off in the afternoon, so I had to start at 2:00. So by that time we were already in the sixth round and, at the golf course, I was out on the picker picking up golf balls on the driving range and I made my way back to wash them at the shed. And sure enough, my music stops playing, in my AirPods and it's a phone call from my advisor and he's just, you get the news. And I was like, honestly, no, I didn't. And then he broke the news that it was Detroit that drafted me. So that was a pretty cool phone call. And then from that point on, I think I was on the phone for an hour and a half straight. Luckily, my boss was very understanding and he didn't really care that I was taking some time off right there. But that was a really cool moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you get the news? The news is I got 200 golf balls that I got to watch. That's the news, you know? Yeah. A little bit of a different news story.
We needed golf balls to back of the range because we're running low. So I still managed to finish washing the golf balls before I made it back.
That's good. Some good multitasking skills there. They'll serve you well, Carter. And yeah. You've got, you know, you talk about the pros. I mean, I've watched the evolution, excuse me, of this position. And I mean, size is just so vital. I mean, you're almost like a prototype now. It's like they don't even look at guys as far as being drafted or prospects. I mean, anybody below 6 feet or 6'1", you probably just kind of voted off the island right there. But you at 6'5", lanky guy, and athletic at that size, you kind of fit that mold. I'm curious to see if there are other goalies or which goalies, I guess probably there are, that you study at the next level. Are there any guys that you really, I mean, I'm sure you follow it, but I mean, any guys you keep maybe a particularly close eye on at the next level at the position?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been that way ever since I was a kid. I always loved the position and watching goalies. Started off with Ryan Miller and then Roberto Luongo to Carey Price. And those were kind of the guys that I looked up to as a kid and that inspired me to play goalie. Now I love watching Thatcher Demko. We have a pretty similar build and another big, lanky, athletic goalie who moves extremely well. And he's very technically sound. And then I also like watching Jake Oettinger, yet another 6'5", I believe he is. Again, athletic and exciting to watch. And so I like picking up things and watching their habits and how they make their reads. And it's always fun for me to watch the goalies.
Were you a goalie, excuse me, early on, or did you play elsewhere and then kind of gravitate towards a position? How did that evolve?
Well, I have two older sisters and they both grew up playing ringette. And when I got to the age where you actually start getting into introduced to mites hockey and whatnot, if my parents had three youth sports schedules, that it physically just wouldn't be possible. So I actually started off playing ringette with one of my sisters. I played for 2 years, played out. And at that age, you can only score 3 goals max. And then from there, you can't score any more goals. So I'd go out there, you get your 3 goals and you play defense. So I love scoring goals. And it wasn't just, I didn't just develop a sensation or the desire to be a goalie coach, because we don't have an official goalie at that age. You just rotate them. And so for somebody that loves scoring goals, I decided to try it once because we just needed a goalie. And then, you know, I realized, hey, I don't have to skate as much. This is way easier. I love this. So from that point on, I've never played out. And then the following year, I made the transition to hockey. And so I've never scored a goal in hockey yet. Still looking for it.
Still looking for that first one. Maybe there'll be an empty netter in your future there. You can throw it 200 feet. You never know.
If I got the green light, I'm going to go for it. But
if you get that. Yeah. And what did you say the sport was? Rink. What was that again? Rink?
Ringette. It's modified hockey, but instead of a puck you got a straight stick that you poke through the ring, and then you have full control of the ring essentially. And the rules are slightly different, but it's predominantly a woman's sport in Canada. Like I said, with the scheduling and all that, we've had some other guys that would play before making transition to hockey, and that's how I learned how to skate.
And all-around athlete growing up, there was a number of others, which I think really is very helpful at your position. Other skills that come into play as a goaltender, anything relative to hand, eye, etc. But just to give us some insight, some of the other sports that you had interest in and that you played. I think you were pretty well rounded.
Yeah, I playing sports and school sports was a big part of my life growing up. I played basketball and volleyball, playing up as in the age groups, predominantly because I was pretty tall as a kid. Go figure. So basketball and volleyball were the big ones. And then it wasn't until like middle school or junior high that I was introduced to badminton. And that was the sport that I kind of stuck with once hockey got pretty serious and the scheduling and you're at the rink quite frequently that you don't want time for after school practice for basketball or volleyball. So badminton, I was able to squeeze in, and I played until my, I think it was 11th grade of high school. And we talk about hand eye and athleticism and agility. That's probably one of the best sports that you could play for being a goalie.
No question. That would really come into play. And the Alberta Junior Hockey League sent some big numbers in terms of guys that come from that league to play Division One hockey. You were the goalie of the year there back in 2019, part of the All-Star team there in the AJHL, and you're going all the way back in your career. Was that the college path? Was that always the target? Hey, I'm in the Alberta League, and I'm looking to get that Division One scholarship. Was that always on the track there for you to come to the United States and have the college opportunity?
I'll be honest, no, it wasn't. The stigma or the way that people think, especially at the time, was you want to play major junior in Canada. So for Western Canada, the WHL had all the hype. The draft, the Bantam draft or the dub is so early, and it's pretty hard not to get fixated on that as a young kid. So heading into that draft year after my second year of Bantam, I thought I was going to get drafted. I got passed up, but I was fortunate enough to get an invite to the spring camp for the Oil Kings, did well. They reinvited me the following year, and they eventually listed me after a pretty solid camp. And then from that point on, I was pretty torn whether or not I wanted to stay in the AJ and still have the exposure and ability to play NCAA, or if I wanted to sign with the Oil Kings and play in the dub. It was I was pretty much on the fence, but yeah, after a lot of consideration, it's kind of a no-brainer just to start off in the AJ so you don't blow your NCAA eligibility. If I wanted to make that transition later down when I was 18, 19, or 20, then we should go ahead. But there wasn't too much exposure to the NCAA in Alberta or Western Canada, for that matter, until I think it was 15 or 14 years old. A bunch of NCAA coaches came up to St. Albert, just north of Edmonton, and just had a little seminar information package event. And that was pretty eye-opening, and that was the first real introduction to what college hockey was all about. And yeah, I valued my education. And so that was something that I considered from the moment I went to that, that event. And after I played my 16-year-old games, I played two games for the Sherwood Park as an affiliate. The schools were already talking to me, and from that moment on, I was like, okay, this is pretty legit. And so I stuck with Sherwood Park, and then sure enough, eight games in, I was talking to a bunch of schools, and Colgate obviously being one of them, and showing the most interesting commitment. So that's kind of how I unfolded to going to the NCAA.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Sherwood Park Crusaders. I know the names of a lot of the teams have been around for so long. With St. Albert Saints, right? Is that the other St. Albert?
Well, they transitioned to Spruce Grove Saints now.
They moved
15 minutes west.
Okay. All right. I missed that in the newspaper. Sorry. they made that move. But you mentioned just the exposure. I know with College Hockey Inc., that might have been a College Hockey Inc. event that you went to. I'm thinking maybe.
It probably was now that you mentioned.
Yeah, that they've been able to get the word out there. And you've certainly kind of, you've come through some adversity. I mean, you're the end of the 22 season ended with an injury. You came back last year, set the Colgate record for saves. You were first in the ECAC, over 1,000 saves last season. And then there was the playoff run. It only took 88 minutes to beat Quinnipiac in an epic ECAC semifinal. And then a big game in the final against a really formidable Harvard team to be the most outstanding player. Currently, you're starting to get kind of the same feeling, you know, being a veteran member of this club, that this team has got a run in them. I mean, you look back, boy, all things begin with Quinnipiac. I'll tell you, you're one guy that they don't want to see you at the city limits of Hamden, Connecticut. I'll tell you, they're probably going to ban you from entering Hamden, Connecticut for the rest of your life with what you've done against Quinnipiac. But no surprise, I'm looking back to get ready to talk to you today. The current run that you're on started against Quinnipiac, 2-1 victory at 35 saves. That was back on January 19th, 7-2-1 since then. I mean, you can make a case. I mean, arguably the hottest team in the ECAC right now, at the most important time of the year. You're starting to get that postseason playoff Lake Placid run feeling.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. We're in a better position than we were last year at this time of the year. We got Solo third locked up right now. Obviously with four huge games to end the season, a lot of things can happen and the standings can get shaken up. So, it's exciting that we have an opportunity to replicate what we did last year. But right now that's not really at the forefront of our minds. We still have some stuff that we got to clean up as a group, heading into the playoffs before we get going there. So right now we're just kind of focusing on securing that first round bye and getting home ice advantage. That's something that we missed out last year and we failed to capitalize on. So that's where our mindset's at. Cause I think that first round bye is huge and having that home ice advantage, we want to play in front of our fans in playoff atmosphere again. So, getting a guaranteed two games in front of them would be great for the school.
And absolutely. And I was in that building, I think it was the year that it opened, that we're up there with BU, and really impressed. I mean, the facility that you've had a chance to play in, I think you're very fortunate. I really like the building a lot. And when that building is full and rocking, it's a great home ice advantage for you. You can really feed off that energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Colgate is such a tight knit community, and it's so small that, basically, everybody that's in the stands. And then we have the locals that always come by, and we've had opportunities to meet all of them. So it's, the community surrounded by the hockey team here at Colgate and in Hamilton is unlike any other.
Yeah, absolutely. Unique atmosphere, environment. One of the things that really attracted you. Didn't even need to visit. All you needed to see was the pictures on Mike Hunter's iPad or whatever he showed you. Say, hey, here's where you go to school. And I said, yeah, I'm okay with that. I think I will go to school there.
Exactly.
No question. Well, whenever I'm talking to anybody, particularly a goalie, I would always say I was the son of a goalie. My dad, and he actually had a scholarship to Brown in 1950, a couple of years ago. But the superstitions run rampant in hockey, particularly at the position. Goalies can be a little quirky. What about you, Carter? I'll put you on the spot there. Are you one of the quirky guys as far as superstitions or rituals or regimens that you got to go through? I mean, what about you from a personal standpoint?
Well, quirky, that's a tough way to put it. I have my routines that I do. I wouldn't say many of them are out of the norm, other than I do like ball work and juggling in our showers at the locker room. That's probably the weirdest thing that I do, but I take pride in the fact that my teammates over the past few years have always told me that, you know what, for a goalie, you're a pretty normal guy.
Normal.
obviously, they don't know the full story, and they all goalies are still pretty got a screw loose or something going on. But for the most part, I'm not. I wouldn't consider myself to be one of those stereotypical nut job goalies.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Normal for a goalie, we could qualify that. We know what you're talking about. And as far as the challenge that you face this weekend and opponents, your thoughts there and familiarity and so forth.
Yeah, it's both teams that we've had very familiar with from our freshman year, playing in each of them, I think, at least 8 times. So it's we developed a little bit of a rivalry, especially with Clarkson. For some reason, those games always got chippy. So we always look forward to playing against Clarkson when we know that there's going to be a good battle. And then even St. Lawrence as well. We've had our fair share of punches being thrown throughout my Colgate career. So it's always been great, especially going up there. The atmosphere is always exciting at Clarkson and St. Lawrence. So, it's one of those weekends that we always look forward to, and it's nice that it's the second last one heading into playoffs. So it's going to be a good test for us to build our momentum that we've already built since, like you said, last time we played Quinnipiac.
Absolutely. Hockey in the North Country, nothing quite like that. Unique atmosphere. And again, the familiarity from the post-COVID season when the Ivy Leagues were out. I mean, you guys, there was a lot of familiarity. You guys played each other a lot, as far as the competition level. So no secrets there for a senior in terms of what you're going to face.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I said, it's going to be one of those battles that you go in for both nights, and it's always going to be a fun test of hockey.
No doubt. Well, best of luck passing that test this weekend, Carter, and on here to the postseason, and hopefully the Raiders have got a run and can continue the run that you've been on here with the momentum you've gained the second half. All the best.
Thank you, Bernie. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Our guest here on Inside ECAC Hockey this week on the men's side, the netminder for the Colgate Raiders, Carter Guylander, joining us.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast. Follow ECAC Hockey across all social media platforms, and thank you to the coaches and players for coming on the podcast every week. This has been the Inside ECAC Hockey Podcast, hosted by Bernie Corbett.